Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hi. Dancing. Pancho Sanchez, everyone. Pancho Sanchez. K. Thomas Alive with my son.
I'm Eric Payne. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah.
K. Thomas Alive.
Chez. I want to say hello to Gwen Goldsby Grant, Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant, media consultant, motivational speaker, former writer for Essence Magazine, radio, television, dancer. Everything. Absolutely fantastic. She appreciates this music. I know that. Hi, Gwen. How are you? Gwen, hello. How are you?
Well, we can hear you this time.
Wonderful.
Watch out now. What's up, Aunt Gwen? How you doing?
Wonderful. And my whole career has to do with Kay Thompson Payne getting me on NBC television years ago. And it started my whole career with Essence Magazine. I thank you, Kay.
Well, I thank you thanking me. That's nice.
Yes.
What about Araldo that time?
You don't forget the bridge that brought you over. That's my motto.
That's absolutely right. You know, you were fussing at me the other day regarding Araldo. What was that about?
Yes, I remember very clearly I was always on Araldo, and I said, you should have Kay Payne. She has a radio show here in New York. You must hear her voice. And so he invites you on the Araldo show. The next thing I know, you were his number one woman, and I was second in command. I said, you fall in love very easily, Araldo. Now it's all Kay Thompson Payne. That was a marvelous time in our lives.
Oh, I'm telling you, really. I remember when Gus wanted to do a show, you know, with you, and let me see, about dance and whatnot. And he said, well, who do you recommend, you know? So I recommended you. And that's you met who on his show? That was Unpossible Black, so you met who?
I met Susan Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
I had never met her in my life. As editor-in-chief of Essence Magazine, she hadn't been editor-in-chief that long.
Yeah.
And we did this show on relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And she invited me over to Essence, 43rd and Broadway then. That's where Essence was located.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I like the way you talk, and this was a wonderful show on NBC television, and we're going to start an advice column like Dear Abby. Because African-American women don't have that kind of advisor.
Yeah.
And you sound like the person to write the column. I said, you're absolutely right. I didn't know anything about writing a column.
But Gwen, you were so successful. You were the media psychologist. You were the media darling. And, you know, the information that you gave out was absolutely right on point. I remember one time that I filled in for you. I think it was on WNJR.
WNJR.
And it scared me to death because this lady called and she sounded like she was going to commit suicide. And I was thinking, where is Gwen, you know?
Yeah, I had few suicides because remember what the show was? It was live 2 till 5 in the morning.
Yeah, how well I know. If you ever call me with that to do another show like that.
You know, most suicides occur after 1 o'clock in the morning in the world. So you are absolutely right about that.
Yeah. They're saying call somebody who knows, who is an expert.
So can I call a timeout with y'all while y'all catching up?
Yes, you may.
And we can have the rest of everybody else calling in as to who you two are. So you are Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant, correct?
That's correct.
And you are a advice columnist, motivational speaker.
Psychologist.
And
sex therapist.
And therapist. Don't say that, Aunt Gwen. I can't. I got to close my ears.
Okay, very good.
But, you're a sex therapist, and so you guys have known each other quite a while. Yeah. I'm just giving the people a background that might be listening in that don't necessarily know you guys, since you guys are doing all Holy Week and catching up. And you guys met a long time ago where?
In New York.
We were dancing in New York, though. We were studying dance in New York. With Alvin Ailey, Carmen de Lavala, Jeffrey Holder, Donna McHale.
Loads of people.
Donna
McHale.
And you guys have been friends ever since.
Before then.
And we had a great vision to be young women from the city. We had great vision for ourselves. We started a dance troupe before Alvin Ailey started the American Dance Theater. Yeah, it was before him. And we started the New Dance Group.
That was in Newark,
the New Dancers, We were giving concerts all over the place at Kane College, which was Newark State College then. We were giving concerts all over the place. We were really a classic dancers. We weren't, you know, we weren't doing the hoochie group.
No, we were doing, you know, we were the gypsies.
Ballet, modern dance.
So along those lines then, let me ask you, what you both think of dance nowadays when you see in these videos and these things? Because when I see a lot of these, well, we're not going to talk about the music videos because that's really kind of, that's not, no training. But there is an influence that I've noticed of kind of a more of street dancing style and a lot of shows that incorporate street dancing and hip-hop, and it seems to have gone away so much from
the classical.
Traditional classical training.
I'm glad. I'm glad. Because
Kay and I both love creativity.
Yeah.
That's very creative. These young people. So I see nothing the matter with, because in my mind, I think both of us are artists, and artists always think in a creative manner. And I think when people start moving in a creative manner, they just create a new genre, a new way of moving in the world.
Listen, Gwen, I wanted to get into, you know, what you are doing now. You have a new book. You have several books out, and you have a new book dealing with victimization and brutalization of women. So please tell us that.
Not just women. It's the victimization that's going on in the country. Every time we look at the news, Americans, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, everybody's being brutalized. Every time you turn around, there's a shooting. Not even the classroom is safe now, the American classroom. I mean, children, they can kill you in the classroom. I was just reading one psychologist, Dr. Prescott, I think his name is. He said, the United States of America is one of the most violent countries on the face of the earth.
Wow.
And I thought, that was very deep. I'd never heard that before. And I began to ponder that. He may be right. Because violence has gotten out of hand in this country, and gun control, you know, assault rifles, and we can't seem to find a middle ground, you know? Seems like we're a Wild West show in the United States, you know? And it worries me because we're teaching a culture of violence in this country.
Right.
I mean, a young man, 20 years old, was just shooting up the mall out there in Paramus, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's scary.
And he didn't shoot anybody. He just wanted to shoot up the mall.
I think
he probably wanted to die.
Apparently, he killed himself. Yeah. So, it does seem now. Do you and Mom, maybe this is a question for you, do you guys remember it being as violent? I mean, the United States has always been a violent country. It was founded on
this. Not this way. No, not at all. We used to leave our doors open when we were young, even in Newark and Elizabeth, New Jersey.
That's true.
It was not like this. This is altogether different. And I think it has...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think it has something to do with this whole issue of guns in this country.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
The love of violence.
The love of violence, you know, the Wild West. And we even fought a war in this country, one of the worst wars, the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
We have not recovered from that mindset of violence. And that's why I started, because I want to teach people how not to take on the victim role.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a way of thinking that you can either become a victim or you can take charge of your so-called victimization. You have a choice.
But well, how do you do that?
One of the ways we do, I'm a student of Dr. Arnold Lazarus of Rutgers University. He came up with something called direct assertion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And he concludes in his work that it's not what somebody does to you or says to you that keeps upsetting you and keeping you nervous. He says it's what you are thinking about, what they have done to you and said to you. Therefore, he says, you are continuing to upset yourself.
Mm, wow.
It's called direct assertion therapy. And that is what I teach. It's a very difficult concept because people want to say, yeah, he did this to me. He said this to me. She did this to me. She said that to me. Yes, she did. I'm not denying that. I'm saying you have internalized it in your own mind, and you keep what I call rotating it in your mind, doing what I call replays.
Yeah.
Therefore, you are creating a victim mentality based on the replays. I say that you have a choice. It's not what they said to you. What's the difference? It's what you keep thinking about what they
said. Yeah, exactly.
Then I say, Dr. Lazarus says, then you take control of your circumstances. Don't allow your circumstances to take control of you.
Right.
It's called direct assertion therapy.
You choose not to think about those things and not to dwell on them. That's a message from God.
He says choose to take command of those thoughts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can't stop thinking about
it. In other words, you're talking about control of the self.
Well,
that's it. You got. That's it.
Kind of.
It's called mind control. Yes.
Yeah.
But you kind of, I think,
about 2 minutes before break.
Okay. Let's take that, that's a relationship standpoint on Gwen, because that's really,
right,
seems to be where a lot of people replay those things. I know I've done that before.
Yes.
So, but the way I've neutralized my tendency to do that, and I guess
I like that word, neutralize. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a $50 word.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
so
the way I've neutralized my tendency to do that is, I notice, like, say you like somebody, male or female, whatever is your preference, and if I don't care as much, then those things, it's almost like protecting your heart because you don't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
So you kind of don't care as much. You try not to care as much, and then those things don't bother you. With me and maybe with perhaps some other people, sometimes you care too much, i.e. falling in love, or like somebody very much, and you take to heart, you know, it's like when two people initially meet and they're trying to impress each other and they're doing these things in their head, they take to heart too much what the other person says, as opposed to,
and then
you become a different person that attracts the person to you because you're internalizing those things.
I wrote about that fall in love in my book, The Best Kind of Loving. One of the things I said, I don't like that terminology at all.
The best kind of
falling into something sounds like you fell in a hole.
Oh,
and like,
you
know, it was done by accident.
I think love is, you don't fall in it.
Yeah.
And I think the terminology itself is misleading.
I like that. Yeah,
because it's a way of mind control. You know, you didn't fall into
anything. What about the art of visualization? If you visualize.
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, I'm his student too. You know, the power of positive thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But
he teaches something that I love.
We have a break coming up in 1 minute on Gwen, so I don't want to get too deep into that. But you said it's a form of mind control.
Exactly.
Before we get to the visualization thing.
Right.
And what do you mean by that? And maybe if you could just start it, and then we'll go to the break and we'll come back. But Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, mind control. To be able to picturize, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking, to be able to picturize in your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
When you picturize, then you can actualize. But if you can't see it, you can't even have it.
Right.
Because the mind is the first place that you take control of your situation.
Exactly.
Inside
exactly.
of your own mind.
Like someone said, I believe if you can achieve it, you can
yes.
achieve it.
Yes. Absolutely.
I'm just
really,
saying that.
The art of, the way he was saying it, Gwen, but the art of visualization,
yes.
that book by Genevieve Bayron with,
yes.
Let's see, I think Professor Troward was her, you know, her professor.
Professor.
And it's absolutely fascinating because they're saying that if you want something, you have
mm-hmm.
to see it. Feel it.
Sure.
You have
eat
to see it.
Eat it.
You have to
surround yourself with it. And
yeah, that's right.
then when
that's
you
right.
visualize something, you become that or
right.
that becomes you or you.
That's
get
right.
it.
It's called creating your own reality and not
right.
allowing it to be created for you.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
okay.
Which is what a lot of very successful people have done, creating their own
yes.
reality. We're gonna, and now
yes.
it's time for a break before we get into this. So let's go to a break real quick and we
okay.
can continue this on the other side on the
right.
GoPro Radio
yeah.
Network.
So
here
stay with
Kay
us.
Thompson Live.
Yeah, stay with us, Dr. Grant. We'll be right back.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have a product or service, a talent or something important to say, now's your chance to have your own radio show. Whether you're just starting out or a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We'll help you to grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 today or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your own radio show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we are back. We're back. I'm Kay Thompson.
And I'm Eric Payne. And I have to let everybody know that our show is sponsored today by Vonda's Kitchen. That's Vonda's Kitchen, which is located in Newark, New Jersey on 183 West Canny Street. Vonda's Kitchen has comfort soul food for your, I was going to say something else, where am I shot? I would say something that you can't say in front of your mom right here, but it's good food because I ate there last week and I can tell you it is really good food. That's Vonda's Kitchen on 183 West Canning Street, Newark, New Jersey.
Right off of High Street.
Right off of High Street. Go on there and get some of that good old soul food, comfort food. It's healthy food, too.
Yeah.
And also, we're also sponsored by Bogey's Nightclub and Lounge, owned by Mr. Reuben Johnson.
Right.
And that address is in East Orange on William Street. What's the exact address there, Mom?
527 William Street, and he has Lottie's and Bogey's.
He also has a restaurant in there called
Lottie's,
which they also serve some really, really good food. So when you go to Bogey's and you're dancing and you're sweating and you're drinking, make sure you get over there and have some food. So
especially in Bogey's. That's where all the
that's what I'm talking about.
Dancing,
where the
yeah.
dancing and the sweating
good
and the drinking
music.
Takes place.
Good music.
Make sure you coat your stomach with some
of
that soul food at
Lottie's. People of our Caribbean friends go.
Right.
Yeah,
Bogey's is legendary in our area over there in the Essex County area, in the East Orange, Montclair, New Jersey area, and Maplewood area, and all of us in Newark area. All of us used to go there and hang out. Bogey's is redone if you haven't been there. In a long time, it really is a new place from those of us that used to go there back in the day. So Bogey's Restaurant and Lounge, Lottie's Restaurant inside Bogey's Nightclub and Lounge.
And we are talking to Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby-Grant. Dr. Grant, continue with that. The art of visualization and feeling something that will change your circumstances if, in fact, it is a negative
right.
set of circumstances.
Yeah. Anything that introduces fear must be controlled through the mind. Let me give you a good example in The Power of Positive Thinking, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale's book. He tells the story of an instructor of high trapeze, and he was trying to teach his students. One student got very frozen with fear, and he couldn't do it. He said it was terrifying to him. He had a vision of himself falling to the ground, and the instructor put his arm around the boy's shoulder and said to him, "Son, you can do it. I'll tell you how." Then he suddenly made one of the wisest remarks Dr. Peel said he's ever heard. He told the boy, "Throw your heart over the bar, and your body will follow."
Mm. Wow. Okay.
And that's definite mind control.
Yeah.
I say people are talking about young boys wearing their pants down below their buttocks and blah, blah, blah. I said they only wear their pants down because all their dreams and hopes are down. I said all you have to do is raise their hopes and their pants will follow.
So true.
Okay.
That's true.
What is the name of your new book, Gwen?
The Psychology of Victimology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to break through that psychology to give them my psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And my psychology is about take control of your circumstances before your circumstances take control of you.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is called mind control.
And that's
but you can't control circumstances. You can only control your own mind.
Exactly. Exactly. A lot of people do that. I mean, you have a kind of a claustrophobic thing, Ma. You don't like to get into the, you know, if you have to go to the doctor, MRIs and things like that. Why? And we're talking about that with my mom. And I don't know if mind control, but I remember one time I had to get one in Los Angeles, and I didn't have any choice.
Okay.
You know, you go in this little small thing. It's almost like a coffin. And
California,
it's like, what happens if an earthquake? How am I going to get out of here? I'm going to shimmy. You know, with my shoulders and stuff, and I just decided that I was going to overcome that fear.
I overcame.
Oh yes.
You want to know?
Well,
how?
You overcame it with some narcotics.
How did you do it?
Now, listen, let me tell you something right now. I was going through the whole, you know, art of visualization, but then again, I told the doctors, I said, look, give me a drug, like you know something. Calm me down and knock me out, or else there will be no MRI.
Right. So
that's
kind of similar to that. I don't know if I used the visualization, but I wanted to overcome that. I set my mind to it. But a lot of champion athletes do that. They see themselves winning the
title.
People create the reality. I know that the late Steve Jobs created his reality.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Microsoft Corporation, a success.
That's like with Gwen and I, you know, in dancing, in choreographing,
Absolutely.
You know, when we were performing.
Absolutely.
You know, there was nothing that you would feel it, and you would let this whole thing take you over.
Mm-hmm.
You became that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeling like nothing in the world, right, Gwen? I mean,
you're
glory, really.
Right.
Yes.
Visualizing what you want to do, what you want to be. And that's why, you know, you have to reinvent yourself.
That's correct.
You get things get boring. Well, Gus and I, we reinvented ourselves. We decided to go back on it, on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
He was on television. I was on television. I was on radio.
Right.
I said, let's go back on radio. We both did that.
Right.
And I could do it over and over again, you know, because that's what I like to do. So once you recognize what you want to do, then you have to go after what you want, you enjoy, what you feel comfortable with.
Getting back to the medical thing that you just mentioned, and these tests and whatnot. I tested my theory on myself this year in a medical situation. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I had a near death experience in January.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking for Martin Luther King's birthday, West Palm Beach, Florida. It's an annual event. It was a great event, hundreds of people. And I spoke, and it was wonderful. My daughter put it all on my Facebook page. You know, it was a great event. And that night I became very ill. I was regurgitating, and I only regurgitate when I'm pregnant. So I knew that wasn't possible. The next thing I knew, I was in the hospital. And here I am in West Palm Beach. My sister lives there. She's a pastor down there. And she's the one who got me the speaking engagement. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital, January 22nd, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And they said to me, we've run all these tests. About 6 hours later, after running all these tests, and they said, you're going to have to go into emergency surgery. I said, what? You're going to have to go into emergency surgery. I said, what? Long story short, the man who was going to put me to sleep, the anesthetist, was at the foot of the bed, and I was talking out loud. I said, I just got here 6 hours ago, and now I'm going into emergency surgery?
Wow.
And he said to me, either you go into surgery or you're dead.
Hmm.
I snatched my mind back under my control, and I said to myself, I don't have the spirit of fear. I'm going under right now, and I have no fear whatsoever. I'm taking control of my mind. The doctor has my body. I'm going under.
Mm-hmm.
I went to sleep. I had major surgery, and it was true. I was going to die because I had an accident about 4 months earlier. Someone actually fell on me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it really injured me internally. I thought it was my ankle, but it was my internal injury that had to be repaired. And I went to sleep, and I woke up in St. Mary's Hospital, and they said, how are you, Mrs. Grant? I said, I'm fine. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right out of surgery. Did you hear me?
Wow.
That's right.
Wow.
And from that point on, that's exactly the way I behaved all the time I was there. And I said to my sister, don't come in here with a sour face. I'm not sick. My body was attacked, and I'm fighting back.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And we're going to put
And I'm walking around, thank God, feeling wonderful.
Yeah,
and that was an example of my theory put to the test in my own life. And I know it works.
And you look absolutely great, too, Gwen, by the way.
Yes. No one would ever believe I had a near-death experience.
Yeah. You're going to have to come back, okay? We're
going
to have part two and a part three, you know, because you've still...
Yes, I hope we have helped your audience.
Yes, I'm quite sure. But what is the name of your new book? You forgot to mention that.
Mention it for us again.
Okay. For the psychology of victimization.
And that's right. I forgot that. Forgive me. I just forgot. I was so caught up in what you're saying. And I'm going to mention an experience I had when I was at WIB in an elevator. The elevator fell from the 41st floor.
Yes, I remember that, Kay.
Yeah,
right.
So I'm going to tell you.
You're telling me that.
Donna Wilson, my buddy, was in the elevator at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So survived that from the 41st floor.
Right.
Yes, and I remember that.
Lisa says, Mommy, don't tell two baby people that because they're going to. Yeah, I said, it happened.
But it, right. But break.
It
didn't fall all the way down because you wouldn't be here.
But it
went for a free fall for about 20 some odd floors or something like that.
Yeah, because it came to a point where it just started bouncing.
Right.
And you know, people say, "How in the world did you come out of that?" And that's a different story. Dr. Gwen Grant, we will talk to you.
I enjoyed it.
We enjoyed it too. We enjoyed
you. Yes, we've been teaching mind control.
That's right.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Gwen.
You. Thank you.
Love you, Eric.
Love you, too.
Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant. She is absolutely fantastic. She was a media psychologist, and she still is a motivational speaker.
Mm-hmm.
When you go and hear Gwen Grant speak, you immediately, you know, you start feeling alive.
Right.
You know, really.
Right. That's true.
And she's been a friend for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow, I'm anxious to get that book, you know. And we are going to really, the next story that we have, the next program that we're going to be doing, the next show, not only to say the next show, the next interview, we're going to be talking, the next segment, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking to Burnett Davis.
Bernie
Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Their real name is Burnett Davis. Let me tell you about Bernie Davis. Bernie Davis is an older gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a senior citizen. He has 9 kids. He is a tennis icon.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of his children played tennis, and we're going to get him on the air because he has quite a story to tell.
Okay.
And his father also played tennis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And one of his sisters, I think played Althea Gibson.
Right.
And won.
Wow.
When she, his sister, I'll have to check with Bernie. When she was a junior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think how insulting that is.
A junior in high school, college, do you remember?
Know.
Let's hope
it
was college if she beat Althea Gibson, because
And that's a true story. And that's the story of the black tennis circles at that time. So we're going to have to take this break.
We have 2 minutes to a break, so we don't need to take it right now, I don't believe. 1 minute to a break.
1 minute.
While we're getting ready to break, I want to talk about again.
We're going to get Bernie Vonda's on the line.
Vonda's Kitchen.
We're going to
get Bernie on the line, and we might have Congressman Donald Payne calling in. I'm going to text him call us a little bit later.
Yeah.
So we can talk to have some time to talk to Bernie Davis. But we're brought to you by Vonda's Kitchen, 183 West Kenny Street, Newark, New Jersey.
Yep.
Best soul food you can get in that area.
Anywhere.
But the best soul food you can get in the East Orange area is at Lottie's Restaurant, which is in the Bogey's Nightclub and Entertainment Complex on William Street in East Orange. 527 William Street in East Orange. So those are our sponsors. There's good times at both of those places. Good food. We want you to go out and patronize them. If you live in the area over there in Newark and East Orange, you know these places, and you know that they serve some good food. And if you got some friends there that haven't been there yet, we would advise them to check it out. Because they're good places. I ate at both of them in 1 week.
Everything is going on. I'm telling you, everything's downtown Newark. I mean, it's amazing.
Right. And now we're going to go for a break real quick. We'll be right back on the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne. Over there is my mom.
I'm Kay Thompson. Stay with us, everyone. We will be right back.
GoPro Radio, the fastest growing network in the galaxy, is leaner and meaner with a new attitude, new technology, and a brand new lineup. Tune in and get wired every Wednesday, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern with the BCS Experience featuring Byron C. Saunders, formerly of New York City's WBAI. Then at 6 p.m., it's the Black Agenda TV Express featuring sought-out political commentator Glenn Ford, formerly of America's Black Forum. Then at 8 p.m., it's time for Kay Thompson Live with the legendary radio host Kay Thompson of Inner City Broadcasting WLIB and her son, renowned actor Eric Payne, who starred in such films as Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, Drop Squad, and many more. Then, at 9 p.m., it's Food Wrap, featuring Nina Markel, a.k.a. the unofficial mayor of Jersey City, and former Viacom marketing guru Shauna Glover. Last but not least, at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Sexy Party Show with the bad boy of dating Mr. Locario of I Love New York fame and his partner in crime, Miles Cunningham. So get wired every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern only on the GoPro Radio Network, www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we are back, everyone. What we're doing now, Eric, is, you know, we're getting Burnett Davis on the line.
We're calling him right now.
Yeah, we're going to talk to him about his career.
Right.
We're going to be doing another part with him because we're not even going to get to all that he has done.
Right.
By the way, he's also, it's not funny, but he's a funeral director. And he lives in New York.
Hello, Davis.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Davis. Hello.
Burnett Davis?
Yes.
Burnett Davis. How are you? Kay Thompson here.
Kay, how are you?
Fine.
So, how are you doing?
Fine. We're on the air. You're on the radio right now. People in the
okay. Very good. Very good. So, where do you want to start, Kay?
So, Bernie, I'm gonna let everybody. You're on the air right now. And,
okay.
To you, and I'm gonna let everybody know where we know you from by saying, "Hey, cousin Bernie, this is Eric."
Okay, Eric. Good enough. Go on with your speed.
How you doing?
I'm doing super. Better than good.
That's good.
Now you have 9 kids. Right,
nine children, yes.
Yeah, and they all play tennis. All right, now who is that beat Althea Gibson?
Nana Vaughn, when she was 18 years old in the juniors. Mm-hmm. That was the last time Althea was beaten by anybody, actually.
And that was
my sister Nana beat Althea Gibson when she was 18 years old in the juniors.
Wow, in the junior tennis tournaments, right, Bernie?
Junior tennis tournament, and that was held at Shady Rest in Westfield, New Jersey.
Uh-huh. Wow.
What year was that?
That I can't tell you. She was 18 years old. Nana would be 80-some-odd years old right now.
I see.
And about how old are you right now? About.
I'm 90 years old, July the 6th, 1923.
You are 90? You don't sound like you're 90.
I'm 90 years old. Kay, you know me for a long time, and I'm 90 years old. Matter of fact, I had a heck of a celebration the kids gave me.
Yeah.
Oh, really? 3 days celebration, yes.
Oh. Wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. I wanted people that's listening to the radio show to know that because they would never believe it there, Cousin Bernie.
Isn't that something? Okay, I'm telling you the truth.
You are.
Listen, okay.
All right.
What do you think about Serena and Venus and their father training them? Do you...
Okay, now Serena and Venus, they were exceptional tennis players. Mm-hmm. I heard about them when they were 14 out on the West Coast. Matter of fact, when I was in California, we went by the arena, by their tennis center that they put up. But they are exceptional tennis players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think anybody is going to surpass them anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my... Go ahead.
Yeah. What about... you don't think anybody's going to be surpassing them anytime soon. What about... Let me just go to take you back a little bit. What about racism in tennis and black tennis circles there? I know you, your father built the North End tennis, you know...
Well, let me get into that. I'll get into that now. North End Tennis Club, which I love, I still love, is now defunct because of circumstances. And in 1912, a group of young men rented some property up on East Grand Street, West Grand Street in Elizabeth, New Jersey. You know where West Grand Street is.
Yeah.
That was in 1912. And then the property up there got too small, so they came down on Pennsylvania Avenue and... fellow on Broad Street let them use the property at 546 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's where they built one court. All right?
Yep.
After he died, he put the courts up, his heirs put the courts up for sale for $1,300. And 13 members put up $100 apiece and bought the club. And that was there. And then in 1924, you know, and we've been on the road since.
Wow. That's amazing.
Wow.
Do all of your kids play tennis?
Pardon?
Do all of the kids play tennis?
All of them but Audrey. Audrey was a swimmer. And Audrey was a swimmer. She was a good swimmer. She won many events in high school and went on, you know, swimming, you know, in competition. But Audrey never played tennis. That's the only one of my children that didn't play tennis. But all the rest of them did. All of them went to college and scholarships doing, you know, playing tennis.
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Now, listen, when you used to travel with the boys with Bernie and Roger, I think, right?
Roger played doubles with your sister Pat years ago. Did you remember that?
Yeah, he also played doubles with me, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Now, what was your question again? I didn't hear the question.
I forgot it.
I
was going to ask. Now, when you built the North End Tennis Club, tennis court rather, why did you all build that?
Why did we do what?
Is there difficulty in playing on the various tennis courts? In other words, did the black...
I understand. No.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. We belong to the ATA, that's the American Tennis Association. That's our affiliation. The USLTA is the other association. You know what I mean? And actually, they didn't want us, and, you know, we survived on our own, so to speak. You know what I mean? But eventually, they let us. Even in local tournaments, they had all our people on one side, and the number one seed would be facing all of us.
Yeah.
Right, black people never got to the finals because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was segregated. It was a race thing. But you know, we try to overlook that.
Right.
We try to overlook that, you know. We got to do what we got to do. And we got to do it in the right way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So we sure got revenge now, didn't we?
We sure did. Yeah, we got, you know, we had Arthur Ashe, we had Althea Gibson, you know, and they never thought this, you know. And now we got Serena and Venus, you know. Go ahead.
And they're really, you know, they're long-lasting. They've had many injuries and illnesses, and they came through with mainly Serena. Serena is amazing.
Yes, she is. She is amazing. Yes.
You say that they are the best so far of the black tennis players in the black tennis circle?
Well, see, who's winning the tournament? That will tell you. That's your answer. Who's winning the tournament? She won the Open.
Yeah.
A couple of years back, her and her sister was in the finals in the Open.
Now, I understand that you have hats from every single tournament, you know, over there at, you know, where is the
tournament
in New York?
U.S. Open.
Yeah, the U.S. Open, do you?
Did I do what?
Do you have caps from every single U.S. Open? Can you tell me something like that?
Yes, not every one of them, but I got about 15 hats from the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't buy them all, but people know I've been saving them, but I bought a lot of myself when I was over to the tournament over there.
And you used to travel with the boys because they were entering into tournaments. How did you do that? You used to travel with the boys because they were.
Yeah, we have to do that. Let me tell you. In order to, let me rephrase that. You know, when you're a youngster, and. You ask a kid what he wants to be, he may say a fireman, he may say a policeman. Nothing wrong with these jobs now. He want to be a garbage picker because that's what he sees.
Mm-hmm.
That is what he sees. He sees the garbage man, he sees the fireman, he sees the cop, he sees everything that he's supposed to see. So my thing is you have to more or less take these children and let them see what you want them to do. And then if they like it, they follow it. You understand what I'm trying to explain to you?
That sounds like a suggestion for parenting for a lot of people.
That's right. Now, when I had an uncle who was a funeral director up in Montclair, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The reason why I'm a funeral director today, because when my mother met her friends, the friend would say to my mother, what are you going to be, sonny? And my mother would answer for me. She would say, oh, he's going to be a funeral director.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's going to be a funeral director. Everybody she told, I'm going to be a funeral director. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's what I became, a funeral director. Same way with my children. You have to more or less, you know, guide them what they get of age. It says, oh, you make a good doctor. You make a good school teacher. You make whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And 10-1, they'll follow what you're telling them. Yeah, like they saw a cop, that's what they wanted to be.
Now, Bernie, your father played tennis, though, didn't he?
Yes. My grandfather played, my father played, my mother played, I played, all my children played. I got a great granddaughter coming up.
Wow.
You got to watch her. She's 5 years old, hitting the ball good. Her name is Paige. Yeah, my great grandchild, yeah. 5 years old. Hitting the ball good.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
She's seeing
tennis. But they're taking her to matches. I'm not saying she's gonna be a superstar, but hey, you gotta use tennis as a stepping stone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course all of your children use it, everybody that played tennis. Use it as a stepping stone to get an education.
That's right. My Bernie went down to North Carolina, and I when they went away to school, you know what I told them? You got 4 years. Ain't no 5-year college. Ain't no 6-year college. Ain't no 7-year college. 4 years. Too many children behind you. But Bernie went down and played with North Carolina Central, got a full scholarship. Then he went to Cornell University. He played tennis for them for 1 year, but everything up there was so tight. You know what I mean? He didn't play the other 3 years. Then he went down to Meharry Medical College in Tennessee, and Mark went to Ohio Wesleyan, and that's in Delaware, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And he met his bride, and he never came back home again. But, you know, when I say never came back home, he had stayed in Ohio. And he has his own insurance agency there. And Roger, you know Roger, Roger was a football player, but he was also an excellent tennis player. But he went to North Carolina State to play football, and he got hurt during practice before the even season opened. So that was ending of his career in tennis and football. And Tony went to Howard, and my son John went to Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh. So everybody's doing something. Then I got three daughters. You know, talk about my daughters.
Yeah, Barbara.
Yeah, Barbara's a medical doctor. Patty, she's an administrative assistant with Mira Lynch over in over there in New York. And my daughter, Nana, she got more money than all of us. And she's working two jobs, but she's doing very, very well. Driving a BMW and going for the best, okay?
I know they're listening in, so we want to say hello to the Davis family.
And hello to all my cousins there.
Yeah, all
okay.
It's so wonderful to be in your presence, and especially at your house when Lisa and I saw
Bobby. It was so nice seeing you. It was so nice seeing you. Honest to God, you all surprised me. And like I said to you, Kay, the door is always open to you. I know you're a busy person, but the door is always open for you, okay?
Yeah, we're going to take you up on that. We're so glad that we stopped by because we haven't seen you in some time. And the legacy that you have left to your children and to people about playing tennis, I mean, it's a wonderful sport. And
it is. Now, let me tell you about tennis before we cut off. Tennis, you can play. I play tennis until I'm 75 years old. But, like football, your days are over after college. Baseball, you can play it a little bit, you know. But tennis, you can play as long as you want to play. Okay.
That's right.
All right. Are we ending or can I still talk?
Yeah, no, we're going to be taking a break. And then
we
got
to go.
Okay, all right, okay. And thanks ever so much for calling.
Okay.
And keep on doing what you're doing, Kay. We love you.
Love
right
you.
On.
Take care,
yeah,
cousin. Bye.
Okay,
right
buddy, thank you so much, and hello to the family.
And we're going to go to a break real quick, and we'll be right back on the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne.
I'm Kay Thompson.
We'll
and we'll
be right
back, everyone. Stay with
the
us.
The views and opinions expressed on GoPro Radio Network shows are solely those of the speakers and are not necessarily the views or opinions of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc., or its affiliates. These broadcasts are provided on the understanding that they do not constitute professional advice or services. Individuals who speak in these broadcasts express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. GoPro Radio Networks and its affiliates do not necessarily endorse or oppose any particular opinion or conclusion discussed in these broadcasts. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute these broadcasts in any way without the express permission of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. GoPro Radio Networks assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with these broadcasts or for your use of these broadcasts in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we are back. You know, we're Eric and I were just talking about, you know, playing tennis and keeping fit, you know, because that is one game that you can still play. Now, Bernie said he's still 90 up, but he still plays.
I'm sure he gets out there
and
hits the ball.
Sure.
That's right.
You know.
I remember the tennis court that used to be across the street from their house.
That's right.
Clay, brown clay
that,
court.
Right?
That's right. And going down there, and you know, we played coming up, and I played in a tournament or two, and my sisters, we all played eventually. And being that we had a tennis court behind our house in the park, we didn't have a tennis court behind the house, y'all. We didn't have money like that, but we had a park that we lived that was behind our house. So we would go out to the park and play some tennis with our cousins.
My sister and I used to play doubles, women's doubles. You know what happened when we played in the Nationals, Black Tennis Nationals down in Atlanta. We made it to the women's finals. We never knew how we made it in the first place, you know. But we used to play a lot of tennis, and if I have to say, so we were pretty good. You know, some people listen and say, yeah, you guys are pretty good. And in fact, for you to make the Nationals, you know, the women's doubles. Anyway, we went down there, and we always dressed alike.
Right.
You know, because we said if we couldn't play tennis well, we could look pretty good, you know. So these two people that we were supposed to play were in the finals. You know, we walked out on the court and we're in this lavender outfits and whatnot.
Right.
And we looked and saw two people. One was from California, who was a known champion. And the other was coach, one of the tennis coaches from, of all places, Princeton University.
Mm-hmm.
Want to know what the score was?
What was the score?
6-1, 6-0.
Who?
Are you serious?
The other team.
Yeah.
Oh, they.
But what had happened was
For you, 6 for them, 0 for you.
And as soon as I saw them, because we knew who they were, you know, we just said, well, what the heck?
Right.
We sat on the bench and, you know, put our lipstick on, and the photographers rushed out to take our pictures.
Took
and
you guys
friends
pictures.
And friends of ours were
you guys
dying
were
laughing.
More camera friendly than the actual winners. Well, there you go.
But tennis is a great game. It really, really is.
Great exercise.
Absolutely.
And as you said, it's a game you can play for a very long time in life.
That's right.
And always keep the exercise. We're hoping that we get Congressman Donald Payne Jr. to comment on, you know, the elections that took place yesterday.
Yeah, what do you think about Governor Christie?
We had Governor Christie get reelected yesterday. And he got reelected by a pretty big margin.
Yes, he did.
Over his support. And it's kind of unfortunate that the Democratic candidate didn't. What are you doing back there, man?
Oh, no.
There's a dude back there opening some plastic with me behind me, but he won by quite a big margin. It was unfortunate that perhaps more people should have come out to support the Democratic candidate, and things should have worked out. Barbara Buono. But unfortunately it didn't. But we had the victories of Angela Garrison running for mayor of Hillside, New Jersey, supported by Congressman Donald Payne Jr., who made it into a runoff against the incumbent mayor. So
that was a victory of sorts.
I don't know who the president of the city council is. I assume you're talking about Newark.
About Newark, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know who's currently the president of the city council. I believe it might be Councilman Aníbal Ramos, but I'm not sure. In Newark. In Newark, we had John James make it to the councilman at large, and
father was Mayor Sharp James.
Mayor Sharp James,
yeah.
And also in Virginia, we had Terry McAuliffe, the Democrat, win governor of Virginia.
Mm.
So we're approaching a few minutes towards the end of the show. And
I'd like to know what your opinion is, or not your opinion. What do you think about the race in New York? What do you think about de Blasio?
Well, I was just going to say de Blasio won as mayor of New York, and it's a great thing. He's the first Democrat in quite a while to be elected mayor of New York. I think he's going to do. Seems to be quite a progressive gentleman. I don't know him personally. Don't really know his politics. I just know he was against stop and frisk.
That's right.
Being that he had a black son. Clearly, he was concerned about that.
As soon as they put his son on the air, and he had that huge afro, I said, he won the game. He has won the game. De Blasio has won.
Because of
the fact that of this interracial family, yes, because that depicts all of New York.
Yeah, but I don't know if all of New York wanted that depiction.
Who cares? You know, it's about time. So
what we want to do?
Credit, and his wife does, and his
daughter does. And
his
I think he will be a good mayor. And
sounds good.
It sounds like it's going to be a good time. So we're talking about this audiobook series that we were doing.
Yes.
That I was going to be doing part of the show, reading some. So, being that I don't think that Congressman is going to be calling us before the end of the show, I'm going to read a section from another James Baldwin short story, and this particular section is called. This is from a book called "Going to Meet the Man," and this short story is called "The Rock Pile." So I'm just going to read a couple of pages for the people because this is really good. James Baldwin is one of our great authors, and so here we go. Across the street from their home, in an empty lot between two houses, stood the rock pile. It was a strange place to find a mass of natural rock jutting out of the ground. And somebody, probably Aunt Florence, had once told them that the rock was there and could not be taken away, because without it, the subway cars underground would fly apart, killing all the people. This, touching on some natural mystery concerning the surface and center of the earth, was far too intriguing an explanation to be challenged. And it invested the rock pile, moreover, with such mysterious importance that Roy felt it to be his right, not to say his duty, to play there. Other boys were to be seen there each afternoon after school and all day Saturday and Sunday. They fought on the rock pile, sure-footed, dangerous and reckless. They rushed each other and grappled on the heights, sometimes disappearing down the other side in a confusion of dust and screams, upended flying feet. "It's a wonder they don't kill themselves," their mother said, watching sometimes from the fire escape. And I'm gonna end here because we've run out of time, I'm told. And so we've been brought to you by Ruben's Bogey's Nightclub and Lounge in East Orange, New Jersey, William Street.
Yeah, it's on William Street,
537 William Street. Vonda's Kitchen in Newark, New Jersey, 183 West Kenny Street. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne, and you are?
Kay Thompson, and you're listening to music by Poncho Sanchez.
Poncho Sanchez!
N.K. Thompson, Poncho Sanchez, N.K. Thompson. Thanks for listening in. Join us next week. We'll be back.